Okay, Avram Avinu is introducing himself to Ephron, and he wants to buy the Maris HaMachpelah. And he says to him, Ger V'toshav Anochi Imachem, I am a stranger and a resident among you. So it's a strange self-description we discuss. The word strange can mean striking, or strange as in weird. We discussed this, right? We didn't discuss this? Well, quickly, the word strange has two meanings, striking and weird. And so when I say strange, most of the time it means striking. Where did this come from? So it came from, I don't have another one. Right, it came from, I found it strange that my Rebbeim would use the word strange a lot. And I found that to be strange. Why are they always saying the word strange? And then I heard a few tapes of the Rav speaking, and then I read, and Rav Soloveitchik would use the word strange a lot, and then I heard Rav Aaron Soloveitchik speak, and so apparently that's the word, and so the Rav's Talmidim picked that usage up from their Rebbe, that to use the word strange as in striking. So this is a strange self-description. Why? Because Ger and Toshav seem to be opposites a little bit. Ger is a stranger, an outsider, someone who doesn't feel comfortable sometimes. Now, you're supposed to make a ger feel comfortable. That's a whole nother shear, a very important topic, but not for now. But a ger is someone, you know, a ger means an outsider. And a toshav means a resident, a citizen. I'm here, I'm part of things. So how can you be both? Are you a ger or are you a toshav? So all the Mefarshim are bothered by this question. Rashi has a pshat, and the other Rishonim have a pshat. It's an obvious question. And the Mefarshim give pshatim. So Rav Soloveitchik once developed an approach here, and he thinks that this self-description of Avraham Avinu really is something all of us who live in the Western world, Jews who live in the Western world, can identify with Avraham's self-description, and we can actually use this as a guide as we go through life trying to live as religious Jews in an increasingly corrupt, difficult, secular world. So let's read here. I'm reading in the first column on the left. Second paragraph. Abraham's definition of his dual status, we believe, describes with profound accuracy the historical position of the Jew who resides in a predominantly non-Jewish society. He was a resident, like other inhabitants of Canaan, sharing with them a concern for the welfare of society, digging wells, contributing to the progress of his country in loyalty to its government and institutions. Here, Abraham was clearly a fellow citizen, a patriot among compatriots, joining others in advancing the common welfare. A toshav is a citizen. Avraham Avinu was a member of the society. He helped build the economy. How did he help build the economy? He dug wells. Back then, if you dug a well, then you can live there. And there's drinking water, and you can set up tents there and set up a home there. So it builds society. It builds the economy. Digging wells was a good example. Avraham did a lot of chesed. A lot of chesed. He was helping the welfare of the whole country, the whole country of Canaan. Oh, that's Avraham.
Welfare.
Oh, very good. Oh, that was a pun. Oh, very good. Welfare. Okay, it took me a while. Okay, welfare. Very good, welfare. Okay, now. He was a citizen. He was a Toshav. But he was also a ger, and he was a ger first. Ger doesn't mean here literally a ger. Convert, it means he was a stranger. It means he was different. Look inside. However, there was another aspect, the spiritual, in which Avraham regarded himself as a stranger. His identification and solidarity with his fellow citizens in the secular realm did not imply his readiness to relinquish any aspects of his religious uniqueness. Wow. If we just have that one sentence to guide our lives, when people speak precisely, then one sentence can be very potent. His identification and solidarity with his fellow citizens in the secular realm did not imply his readiness to relinquish any aspects of his religious uniqueness. His was a different path, faith, and he was governed by perceptions, truths, and observances which set him apart from the larger faith community. In this regard, Abraham and his descendants would always remain strangers. Avram was a ger. When it comes to ruchnius, I'm different. I have my own standards. I have my own rules. Jews live differently. Jews behave differently. Jews die differently. Avram is coming to bury Sarah. And Avram is trying to explain to Ephron, I need to buy my own burial plot. I can't bury Sarah in the regular, in a section of the Hebron community cemetery. I need a special Jewish cemetery because I'm different. I'm a ger. So when Avraham is introducing himself to Ephron, he's explaining what he's doing. Look, Ephron, you know I'm a citizen and I help, but now it's different. I need to buy this Maros HaMechpeah because I need a special burial plot because I'm different. I'm a ger. And I act different, I live different, and I die differently. Jews die differently. We have more kavod for a mace, and we have special rules and regulations how to deal with someone who dies. And this is Avram, this is life. Life is about where ger and a toshav. We're toshavs. You live in America, you live in Canada, you live in England, you vote in the elections. We care who leads the country. We think, you know, we want this senator, not that senator. We care about the taxes, more or less. Jews care that there are good roads. Jews want there to be good roads because Jews have more kids than the Goyim do. And you need good roads to get to the hospital on time, especially if it's whatever. You're driving, it's 3 in the morning or whatever. I once got, we were living in Teaneck, and my wife wanted to use LIJ. That's a long, so normally, so for the last few weeks, we moved into my in-law's house, but one time we had to go. That was, I don't drive, I don't speed normally, but it was 3 in the morning, and from Teaneck to LIJ, it wasn't very long, whatever. Okay, anyway, so we got there. So Jews care about these things. Jews care about that there's, you know, the welfare of society and things should be better. We go to work, we pay taxes. We want there to be a just society. We care about the law system. But we're gaven. We're different. We have a Torah. We have a Masorah. We have the way we live our lives. We have a spiritual approach to life. And the Jew has to know, I'm a ger first. I'm different than the non-Jewish society around me. Non-Jewish is the wrong term. Secular. I'm different than the secular society around me, and I have to live that way and act that way. Look here in the middle column, the second column, the top paragraph. Like other people, the Jew has more than one identity. He is a part of the larger family of mankind. But he's also a Jewish identity, which separates him from others. Each identity imposes upon him particular responsibilities. As a citizen of a pluralistic society, the Jew assumes the social and political obligation to contribute to the welfare, the general welfare, and to combat such common dangers as famine, corruption, disease, foreign enemies, where the freedoms, dignity, security of human life are at stake. All people are expected to join as brothers in shouldering their responsibilities, etc. Next paragraph, I skipped one paragraph. The Jew, however, has another identity which he does not share with the rest of mankind. The bris with Hashem, which was established at Har Sinai over 3,000 years ago. All of Jewish history only makes sense in terms of the validity of this covenant, which entrusts the Jewish people of all generations with a particular national destiny and a distinctive religious heritage, their responsibilities that are uniquely Jewish, etc.
Where does that say from?
That's a good question. This is taken from a book called Reflections of the Rav. Until 10 years ago, there were not that many essays of Rav Soloveitchik published in English. The first two books were, this is not his own hand, this is not his own word by word. There were speeches and essays he presented, which were written up by, and Reflections of the Rav, Volume 1 and Volume 2. And they're very good books, and they present the Rav's Hashkafa on things My Rebbe Rav Shech Shlita always says, if you wanted, what was the Rebbe all about? Read these two volumes. You get a very nice introductory approach to it. You know, some of the Rav's famous essays are, let's say, The Lonely Man of Faith is a very deep thing. So in Tosfos Zohar, Volume 2, the first two essays explains that in easier English. This is easier English than the Rav himself actually wrote. And that's it's the book, it's in the library. It's called Reflections of the Rav. It's very, very good books. If you want to read something about Rav Soloveitchik, read those two books. And you have a nice sense of where the Rav was coming from. Then read the book called Nefesh HaRav by Rav Schechter. Once you've read those three books, then you know a lot about what the Rav was all about. Guys, this is life. And this is the challenge. The challenge of a Ben and a Bas Torah who lives in the Western world is to make sure I know I'm a Ger and I'm a Toshav. And I'm not going to let the Toshav part of my life overflow into the Ger part. That is the challenge that we face. I'm a Ger and I'm a Toshav. I go to work. I have a good job. I pay taxes. But my Toshav life can't overflow into the Ger life. I'm going to give you three examples. Each one is important. I'll give you three examples. Number one. So, my sister works in Goldman Sachs. It's a nice company. And she's been there many years. She's doing very well. And my sister, you know, she came here a year and a half, okay? And she dresses appropriately. She talks appropriately. And she stands out in a positive way. And she's a walking Kiddush Hashem in her job. And this I heard from other people. She wouldn't say because she's an Anuf, that her co-workers won't use Nivul Peh when she's around because they know it bothers her. And my sister is not an imposing figure. I think you'd call her petite. She's short and she doesn't yell when she talks, but she dresses appropriately and she talks appropriately. That's amazing. So I start crying when I say this. So I was machaving to my Rebbe. I once was driving Rav Schechter in the car somewhere and I was talking to him and I raised this topic. And he said, and one of my daughters works in a bank. And then he started crying. And when she's around, her co-workers don't use Nivul Peh when she's around. And he started crying. So I felt so good that if I cry about the same things my Rebbe cries about, that I'm doing okay. I don't know. I don't learn like he does. Okay, he knows Kol Torah Kula. But literally. But and the rest of us don't. But anyway, so that's amazing. That's amazing. And that example can and should be you. If you're going to work somewhere, listen, if you work in a school, so everyone, if you work in a Jewish school, everyone's going to be wonderful. But if you're working in a firm somewhere, you're a lawyer, you're a doctor, you're working in an office somewhere, people should know, hey, she's different. Look how she dresses. Look how she talks. Look how she carries herself. That's exactly a Ger V'Toshav. A person who says, look, I live in America, there's fashion, so I have to be fashionable. So I'm going to go to the store and buy what's in fashion, and more or less it'll be hopefully b'tznius. If that's the way you view it, that's the Toshav part of your life overflowing into the Ger part. That's the wrong approach. The right approach is, I'm a Ger, I have a Shulchan Aruch, I know the way I want to dress. I also want to be fashionable. Okay, so I'm going to take my Ger, my Shulchan Aruch, I'm going to go to the store, and given my limits, I'm going to buy what's out there that's in fashion, and I'm going to dress just fine. But it's not that I'm going to start with what's in fashion and sort of be okay in how I dress. It's the opposite. It's exactly this. A person who starts from what's in fashion and tries to sort of dress appropriately is being a Tosha first and a Ger second. A person who says, I know what the right way to dress is. There's a Shulchan Aruch. There are rules and regulations. And I know what's Batam. What's appropriate. I'm going to find things in the store that look nice and are within the fashionable, but I'm a Ger first. That's a great example. You keep it in mind. Another example. I have another relative who doesn't speak Lashon Hara at the office. Now this, by the way, there are good books out there. Stephen Covey, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Very good books. Good book. The 7 Habits of Highly Effective Families. Very good book. I'm giving it full service class here. A PhD idea. What's the PhD idea? You take that book of his and you find all the makoros in Chazal, he hits the nail on the head all over the place. Rav Orwick likes his book. You can take his book and find every place where what he says blends into what Chazal, he was mechabed into a lot of things. It's a PhD. He has so many ideas that an ordinary Torah lifestyle fits with 98% of what he writes in the Seven Habits of Highly Effective Families, and he has the research that his approach works. So it's amazing that, let's just give you one simple example. He's very into family night. That you have to have family camaraderie one night a week, and he had interesting things. What he did with his family, they did crazy things one night a week, and they plan like Little League, and plan like high school basketball practice. They had a big schedule up, and you have to organize your weeks that, Monday nights are going to be free or whatever, whatever night you're going to choose. And, we'd say, if someone gives a shiur and someone goes to a shiur, so you find one night or whatever. So, and then that night they were together and they did something together as a family. And it built up the whole sense of you feel good with your family, one for all for one, and it helps your self-esteem. If you go through life knowing, like my brothers and sister would do anything for me and vice versa, it's a great feeling, it's a certain confidence that goes through your life. And it builds your self-esteem and everything. So we have Shabbos. Friday night, just naturally, a Torah lifestyle has what he calls family nights. And things like that. And there are many examples like that, many examples. And so you want to make Shabbos special. You want to make Shabbos special. And family always comes first, but especially on Shabbos. Make sure you have time for your kids and you spend time with them and talk to them and listen to them. We'll discuss that at a different time. This is Hashem. Anyway, so what are we talking about? Oh, Stephen Covey. So he has in his book, he talks about gossiping. He doesn't say the word Lashon Hara, 31 Averas, like the Chofetz Chaim says. He calls it gossiping. And he says that the gossipers come out behind, and he has all these studies that people that don't gossip, at the water cooler, they end up being more respected. And there's a whole half a chapter on, I think it's a trust building trust. So this relative of mine, there's a whole sense of trust. He's given kavod in his office because he doesn't speak Lashon Hara. And it's so rampant down there. Everyone, talk about this, discuss this. What's he doing? What she's doing? What are they doing? All these terrible things. And all this gossiping. And he told me, I heard from other people, a certain amount of respect. That's Ger Vatosha. I'm a Ger first. I'm a Swig Lashon Hara. Nivel Peh, Lashon Hara. Third example. This third example, I don't think applies to you directly, but it might apply to relatives of yours, acquaintances of yours. And I'm quoting here another Rebbe of my Rebbe, Rav Willig Shlita, and he says something. I may have mentioned this already this year. I mention it a lot now. And it's like this. Rav Willig's a shul rabbi. Shul rabbis deal with real life situations more than a magid shir. A magid shir gives a shir, he has talmidim, people call him on the phone, older. If you're a shul rabbi, you deal with families, lots of families, dozens, hundreds, and there are challenging situations, and if you add up all the families in your neighborhood, so the rabbi deals with all of them. So Rav Willig has a lot of life experience. A lot. And he gives a speech about drinking. Rav Willig drinking liquor, drinking water is healthy. Drinking 8 cups a day, it's good for your health, it's good for everything. Drink 8 cups a day, it's a great idea. It's also good for, if you talk a lot, it's good for your, I have another Rebbe, he's my age really, he just knows Kol Drachu also, and he always drinks, he gives shiur all the time, and he drinks in every shiur, because the doctor said it's good for his throat, so if you listen to him on tape, every 10 minutes, see, he wears the mic over here. Everything he says is taped. And you hear the gulping. So if you listen carefully, you'll see, and this person's giving a shiur every 12 minutes. Because what he's doing is, he's taking these sips because he was told, and it's probably true. I read it somewhere. I don't do it, but whatever. It may be something to pick up. It's good. It's a good habit to pick up. That he drinks every 15 minutes, a little sip, and then he gives a lot of shiur. This person, he must drink, 25 cups a day because he's taking a sip every 15 minutes. He gives a lot of shiur. It's a good idea. What are we talking about? Rav Willig. Now listen to this. So Bilal doesn't like drinking. And he tells people don't drink because it affects your life and this, and people get addicted. Alcoholics, all these. But even if you don't have a weakness, but Islam, just don't drink. It's so unhealthy. What are you doing it for? It's so unhealthy. And he has a line. And I want you to listen to this line. And you can quote it to people you know or relatives or acquaintances. I've quoted this line. And he says, don't drink. But if you absolutely need to drink, never drink around goyim. And I'll give you his example. I quote this. I'm not so old. I've been giving shir for a while. I've had talmidim who are out there in the workforce, and they say, they write emails, dear Rebbe, thank you. This comment may have saved my life, and I'll explain to you. And that goes in the save box. Everyone needs chizuk. So it goes like this. There's a common thing in America now. Very common. Very, very common. You work a long day, pressurized work, you're in Manhattan, you're this, you finish work 5, 6 o'clock, you're wiped out, you're going to go home now. What do you do? What does almost everyone do? You go down to the bar. A drink or two, they're all over Manhattan, and then you go home. So Volk says, don't do that. Don't go down to that bar. If you absolutely need to drink, you go home, you take a drink at home. But I want you to go home first. Take a drink, sit down, go home. Listen. Why? But we'll tell stories. I have not heard... See, every person's listening. Rav Schechter, Shlita, he cries a lot. Oh my gosh, you hear him on tape? He cries. He cries about Eretz Yisrael. He cries about Jewish soldiers every time. He cries about the Rav. He cries about the Masorah. He cries about the Masorah. I have stories about that. He talks about the Masorah, he starts crying. And Rav Lil doesn't cry so much. I've heard Rav Lil cry on tape, and he tells this story. He has a Talmud, doing very well, married, solid guy, doing well in his work. Gave a Dafyomi shir, and he would never drink at work. And one time, there was a goodbye party for one of his older colleagues. He was retiring. He went down one time. He took one drink. This was very scary. And then later his wife called Rav Willig, and it turns out that that one drink led to this and this and this. And his whole marriage was shaky. And Baruch Hashem, Rav Willig was able to help get involved. And he saved. And then he told stories about women. He says, because when you're a shul rabbi, you deal with real life situations. She's a businesswoman, and went on business trips, and this and the whole thing. I'm telling you, it is such good advice. It is such good advice, because once you're in that environment, and one drink, and two, and five, and if they don't care if they get drunk so much, and then you get sucked in. And I had a Talmud who called me and said, Rebbe, I'm not a partner. What's one step below a partner? Associate. I'm an associate partner in this big firm, and every time we win a big case, we all go down, they all go down to drink, and I don't go. And he said to me, it's very uncomfortable. So I said, okay, I'll talk to Rav Willig. And I called Rav Willig, and Rav Willig said, tell him he'll get more schar in Olam Haba. That even though it's uncomfortable. And he said, tell him if he can't go. And he doesn't go. He doesn't go down. If you need a drink, you shouldn't need the drink. But if you need the drink, you go home. There, that's Gerv Atoshav. Atoshav, I'm one of the gang. This is what everyone does. You want a big case, go down for a drink. That's Toshav. Ager says, I'm a religious Jew. I can't be in that environment. It's not just the drink that goes on over there. The environment, the atmosphere, the avira over there is not the holiest avira. And you don't want to be there. So that's exactly that example, or Will's example, is exactly this essay of the Rav. Ager first means, if I need to drink, I'm going to go home. I'm not drinking here. I'll drink at home if I have to. And again, I shouldn't drink so much. But if I need to drink, I'm going to go home. And I gave you my kula. One shot down there. You can have two shots at home if you need it. And the boys like that one. Okay, I guess that joke went over better over there. But okay, fine. Maybe not drinking that. But the boys, they like that a lot. Anyway. Very, very lemaisa. This is an important essay. This is real life. There are more examples in this. This comes up all the time in real life. Well, everyone does it. Just because everyone does it doesn't mean I have to do it. I'm a ger first. Guys, the Western world now, it's crazy what goes on over there. Just the changes that are happening so fast. What's considered normal? What's considered normal now, it's incredible. I'm not so old. This is in the air. And it's very hard. Oh, well, it won't affect me. It's very hard to... nothing affects me. It's in the air. It's on TV. Other people do it. How bad can it be? What's wrong? This is what people do. and it seeps into the Orthodox world, and we have to be careful. That's why you have to read this article a lot. I'm a ger v'toshav. I'm a ger first, and I'm a toshav second, and it can literally save your life. And already, I'm not teaching boys so many years, around 10 years, and a little more. And I got emails already, boys in the workplace, and this exact little speech from Rav Willig makes a bit. And again, I'm not a show rabbi. I don't deal with these things directly. He deals with all, and he has more than one story. It's very frightening. So what can I tell you? Very important essay. Ger v'toshav, Hanochi Imachem. I gave you three examples. There are many more. There are many more examples than that. I have a humorous example. It's a little different. Humorous example. So my father's a lawyer. My father should live with me well. He's a lawyer. And he has clients from all over the place. So my parents are from Silver Spring. So my father doesn't deal with so many Hasidim, you know, because in New York there are a lot of Hasidim. So one time he had a client, two Hasidim came to his office. Okay. So they came in, and as they were coming in, his secretary was like doing like strange motions, and then she was like surprised. And then she left. It's strange. But strange isn't weird. It's strange. It's strange. So afterwards they left. So here's what happened. So this was, we had a lot of fun at the Shabbos table with this one. So my father said, what happened was, when they came in, she went to shake their hands. And they're chassidim. Whoa! Like this, they jumped back. So she didn't realize that it was a man-woman thing. So she thought, chassidim, don't shake hands. When they were walking in, she was trying to motion to my father, don't shake their hands, because if you shake their hands, you'll lose a client. So she's trying to motion, and didn't clap. And then when they shook hands, she couldn't understand, why are they shaking hands? So he had to explain to her that, you know, no, that's, they don't shake women's hands, but you know, they do shake hands normally. So that's like in a different example. That's a funny story. Like she's, oh, you're gonna lose a client. Don't, what are you shaking their hands? Like she was on, like now she would have texted him or something, whatever. I don't know. This was a long time ago, way back in the Stone Age. Anyway, that's not bad. So that was the story. Oh, it's a woman thing. She was nervous he would with the losing a client. Anyway, very important stories. And I don't assume the people in this room have issues with drinking, but people have cousins and relatives and acquaintances and people they know, and down the line. This is very good advice. Don't quote me. Everything I'm saying here is not from first-hand knowledge. I don't know these things. I'm not Bob. I teach, and I'm Rebbeim and yeshivas don't deal. They deal, but it's not the same. A shul rabbi deals with everything. Everything. You quote Rav Willig, and if Rav Willig says this, and if Rav Willig says it'll save your life, and he starts crying. I heard him tell the story three times on different tapes, and twice I heard him start crying. Starts crying because this story is so terrifying for him. It's very good advice. And if you have to drink, you drink at home. And that's exactly Ger v'toshav. You got it? This essay could be like a topic model for. And the fact is, we live in these two worlds. We have another. I'll give you one more example. This is a scary world out there. There's Rabbi Dr. Abraham Chorsky, Shlita, right, the famous, he wrote, written 60 books and all these speeches. Okay, he gave a speech last March, I think. It's on the Torah Web. Torah Web is a great website. TorahWeb.org. Torah, T-O-R-A-H, Web, W-E-B.org. They have a lot of great speeches. He gave a speech, and a very important speech. I encourage you to listen. That it's about the challenges and that teenagers face growing up in the modern world, which we didn't have in the old days. And the internet and all the problems, the challenge of the internet. See, he just made a comment about iPods and iTouches. And he said, why in the world does a 12-year-old boy or a 13-year-old boy or a 14-year-old boy need a cell phone that has internet access? And he said, there's absolutely no reason on God's earth that you have to give a 13-year-old boy a cell phone with internet access. And he's right. That's the way he said it. That's exactly the way he said it. You can listen. He said, why are you doing that? Well, because everyone else does. Yeah, but so what? Everyone else does. It's terrible. That's why in Israel, we discussed this before, they have kosher phones. And they have it in America too now, right? I'm told in America, it's coming to America. This is a kosher phone. It has a hechsher on it. It really does, right there. The hechsher means there's no internet. It also means there's no texting. Texting is that's like a chumra, the texting thing, whatever. But the texting, because, I don't know, whatever the reasons were, texting, they have reasons why they don't like texting you this much. Okay, I don't know. But the main thing is the internet. So I have kids who live away from home. They're in yeshiva, they're in a dorm for high school or in yeshiva. I want to talk to them every night, so Baruch Hashem, they call. That's good. But I don't have any internet access. So you have kosher phones. So somebody asked them afterwards, yeah, but if you don't allow it and all your kids' friends allow it, it creates problems. That's true. That's a challenging situation. That's a big challenge. What do you do? So that's a good question. We can't answer it in 3 minutes, but number one, you consider where you're going to live in the first place. You're going to live in a place where people have common values. It'll be easier if there are more families around your neighborhood that think like you and act like you. It'll be easier. If you're the only one saying no, okay, it's hard. Number two, there's a group of people out there that have dealt with this question. And Be'ezer Hashem, they've dealt with it successfully. Who are those people? Who are the people who've dealt with this exact question? The high school teachers and the high school rabbis and the rebbeim in your neighborhoods, who live in your neighborhoods, and they're doing this. If I lived in America, the people I would speak to the most are my high school rabbis who raised their kids without having the same thing everyone around them had. But they were happy. I'm from Silver Spring, Maryland. Rabbi Hyatt. Sweet. Rabbi Hyatt raised, I don't know, a lot of kids. He didn't have a TV. And he didn't have... back then, TV was... when I was younger, I remember when cable started. So when I was younger, it was just plain TV. And cable started. So I would sit for hours and say, Rebbe, how'd you do it? How did you go with life? Not always saying no to your kids. Because other parents, we had TVs. I said, Mom, I want to have my parents' house is wonderful. We'll talk about this. It's wonderful. It's warm. Shalom bias. I said, Mom, I want exactly your house except for the 6 televisions. It's a lot of televisions. We had one here. And she said, no. She said, but the reason why the house was so calm is because since you all watch TV in your own rooms, then you know, there's never any fighting. I said, Mom, there has to be a way to have a nice, warm home without everyone fighting, without 6 TVs. Okay, that's the family show. I said, Mom, I want your house, but without the 6 TVs. Okay. Parents have a wonderful home. He never had a TV in his house or behind. So how did he do it? Didn't your kids always want to rebel or Rahman al-Islam because everyone you're saying no? So you talk to them. You talk to them for hours. And you have to. And these people are doing it and they've done it. So I'm telling you to talk to them. You have high school teachers. They live in similar neighborhoods to yours. And you know that they don't allow a lot of things that maybe are allowed in other homes. So how'd they do it? And I'll give you examples. This example tells a lot about my mother and it tells a lot about my Rebbe. So my Rebbe for my whole life was Rebbe Einemer Zatzal, the Rebbe of Silver Spring for 50 years. 50 years, a long time. And he was my Rebbe my whole life since I was born until last Pesach when he was Nifter. So I remember when I was a kid, when I was a teenager, so his grandkids would watch cartoons in my house with my younger sister. Six minutes. I was just a kid. Okay, and then I'm looking back. They wanted their kids to have an outlet. You know, once in a while to go watch them. You don't have a TV in the house. So when you go to Silver Spring, you know, it's not Baltimore. It's not me. But trusted my mother that in the Ginsburg house, if they're watching TV, it'll be something which is basically, you know, which is appropriate. You with me? So that's an example of like finding a way to give the kids an outlet, but in a way where the parents could have trust. That's good parenting. That's exactly this navigating. How do you navigate? So I'm looking back. Like, again, I was a kid. I was, oh, wow, this is great parenting. This is strange. Why is the Rav's granddaughter watching? Got the example? These are the people you talk to, the people that are doing it. I'd go to my friends. I have friends who are shul rabbis, who are high school rabbis in the 5 towns and different towns around New York, and discuss them. What do you do exactly? How do you do it? It's a challenging question because on the one hand, Rabbi Twersky is not right. He's 1,000% right. There's no reason that the 13-year-old kid should have a cell phone or an iTouch. iTouch also has internet, right? And there's Wi-Fi everywhere, but it came out everywhere now. It used to be your home to be secure. Yeah, but now if your neighbor has, what's it called? Wi-Fi. What's the other way? You used to call it wireless. Is Wi-Fi the same as wireless? Okay. I used to call it wireless. Everything's changing. Even the words change. Okay, whatever. Everything's changing fast. So if your neighbor has Wi-Fi, so your house isn't safe anymore, even if you're careful in your house. Your neighbor has Wi-Fi and eye touches. So there's no. So Rabbi Twersky is 1,000% correct. But, Taka, what if all the other kids have it? So what are you supposed to do? That's a good question. So talk to people who are doing it. What do you do? How do you do it? You have to find other things that they can do in the home. And it means the parents spend more time with their kids and do things with them. You can have a very happy, healthy upbringing without all this stuff, but it normally takes more involvement of the parents and doing things and spending time and going places together and spending time with the kids and reading to them and spending time with them and going to the library with them. Whatever. Library is also dangerous now. Like, whatever. You better be with them in the library. Whatever. The world's changing. So anyway, that is Ger V'Toshav. So Rabbi Twersky's example is that's a Toshav. I live in America. All the kids have, you know, fourth generation cell phones, even when they're 13. So my kid's going to have one too. No, why should they have one too? It doesn't make any sense. You're a Ger first and a Toshav second. And we will stop.